Welcome to the Seed World Pro podcast, where seed industry professionals get the knowledge, tools, and peer support they need to grow their businesses and careers. I'm your host, Michelle Krieger. Today's episode will feature guest host Jenny Schweigert and Professor Hammett, visiting professor to Purdue University. They're going to tackle the idea of treating your talent like an annuity or a commodity.
Hello, this is Jenny Schweigert, and I am coming to you from Seed World. Today, our guest is Dr. Pete Hammett. How are you, Pete?
I'm doing well, Jenny. Thank you.
Very good. You have an incredible background, starting all the way back from designing suits for NASA.
Yeah, some would say it's a bit eclectic.
Yeah, it very much is. Very much is. Yes, yes. So give us a brief 30,000 square feet breakdown on how your career has progressed.
Yeah. So most recently, I was the head of HR for a large energy firm in Oklahoma City, oil and gas company. And I was with that organization for 10 years, OG&E Energy Corporation. Started off as a managing director of talent management, and then took over the HR function. I will say this, running HR is the best and worst job I ever had. I enjoyed it, but it was really awfully complicated. And so we'll just kind of leave it at that. While at OG&E, we did a lot in the leadership space, won the 2011 Chief Learning Officer of the Year Award for the leadership development work that we did. So it was great. Love that. Before going to the energy firm, I was with the Center for Creative Leadership, CCL. A lot of people are familiar with them. CCL is one of the world's leading organizations in the science and development of leadership. They train probably in the neighborhood of 30,000 leaders worldwide. I was with them for about 8 years, was in their assessment administration group, was a group director there, was also a senior faculty, and wrote a couple of books. With CCL, went all over the world talking and training on leadership development. Before I went to CCL, I was with American Express for almost 12 years, did a lot of things with Amex, left Amex as their vice president of operations and technology. So if you have an American Express card and it gets lost, the systems that come into play to make sure you get a new one are systems that our teams were part of. So a lot of the co-branding work that American Express does, I was led the teams that put all those together. My first bit of business was in aerospace and defense. I was a software engineer, and I wrote the systems that put spacesuits on shuttle astronauts, and was with that organization for about 10 years as well.
It's just absolutely incredible. And I remember in an earlier conversation that we had, you prefaced you were not responsible for putting all of the MX booths and things at airports to get additional customers.
Yes, yes. When you're walking through the airport, particularly in Atlanta, and somebody grabs you and says, "Do you want a Delta SkyMiles card from American Express?" That was not me. I didn't have anything to do with that. I remind them all the time they shouldn't be quite so aggressive, but that's how they're compensated. So I don't grudge them that. But yeah, no, that wasn't me. So don't be mad at me on that one.
Sure. So we are in the middle of a series of episodes that are talking about talent acquisition. And in this episode, we're kind of backing things up to the basics, and we're going to talk about aligning business goals of the company along with your talent strategies and how you approach those strategies so that business goals are being met. Can you talk a little bit about the benefits of aligning the two?
Absolutely, Jenny. Sure. So let's take it to the highest level and ask the question, how do we view talent in an organization?
Great question.
And I can tell you, at least in my experience, there's typically one of two views. Organizations will view talent as something they want to invest in. I use the language of an annuity, something they want to pour time and effort into, and anticipate that resource, that annuity, is going to return value back to the organization year over year over year. And that's how they view their talent. Other organizations, well, they may not say this, but their practice really is one of viewing talent as a commodity. It has value, to be certain, but once the commodity is expended, then it's put off to the side, and you go out and get more commodity,
right?
Maybe like fuel or feed, something along those lines. No organization is going to say this right out loud, that they view talent as a commodity. But when you watch the way they think about talent, the way they invest in it, the way they think about their people, it's clearly they have a commodity aspect to it. We'd like to ask organizations to be not just put lip service to saying talent is our most valuable resource, but actually to be more thoughtful and mindful about, well, what does that mean? And how do you engage talent in a way where you're investing in it for the long term and looking for it to pay back benefits year over year? One of the first ways to do that is strategically, when you think about talent, what does that look like? So we think about talent in this regard strategically, as we say, when we're thinking about the people that we need to run our organization, we're not just thinking about the organization we have today. We're thinking about the organization we may have 3, 4, 5 years down the road. What's the business strategy that we're engaging? And what talent capabilities do we need to execute that business strategy? Let's just say, for example, let's go back to NASA. NASA has a strategy of better, faster, cheaper, being more innovative, taking things and making them a lot more compelling than they used to be in the past, mm-hmm. putting a rover on Mars for half the price and a fraction of the time. So what does that look like? And in addition to the technical proficiency that NASA absolutely has, now can we look at what the capabilities might look like from a talent view to be more innovative, to be more creative, to be more agile in how you think about things? We could say the same thing in another industry. Let's say banking, for example. We say, hey, banking is all about how do we capture and make the most use of financial assets. Now we think about banking services and we say, hey, maybe it's not just about capturing and major assets. Now it's thinking more about what are the expectations that customers are going to have. And so let's think more about, can we bring in a leadership competency or a talent competency that has that kind of skill set in it? So we're not just building people for what we need today, but we're building people for what we need tomorrow. And Jenny, you know, we'll talk about this in another session, but when we think about talent succession planning, if your role is vacated, what we might look at is, hey, well, let's go get somebody just like Jenny. Mm-hmm. But maybe another way to look at this is say, we love Jenny, and I don't know how we'll survive without Jenny being here, but we need Jenny plus. We need Jenny plus somebody who can help drive our company for the next 5 years and where the organization is going 5 years from now.
So would you compare this to, there are some organizations or some farming operations who are looking towards veterans to come on board, and you know they've got those basic skills, even though they may not be from an agriculture background, they do have talents that are beneficial to the farming operation. Would that be a comparable example?
That is precisely what we're talking about. And in truth, as we talk to a lot of the folks in the agribusiness world, some of the larger organizations, because the war for talent is so tight right now, they're looking for cross-industry types of expertise. Mm-hmm. What if we brought somebody in from a highly regulated industry, because we have regulations that we have to deal with in the agribusiness world, and maybe that cross-pollination would actually be helpful for us. Thinking inside the farm community itself, exactly. Where do we see the business going down the road? What are the key things that are really going to drive what we're trying to do 2, 3, 4, 5 years out? And what are the leadership skills, talent skills that's really going to be critical for us to make that happen? And how do we grow that talent or go out and acquire that talent mm-hmm. so that our business strategy can be executed?
Very good. What would you say to a company that might come back and say, well, hey, that's great, the annuity approach, but we're investing so much into that person. What if that person leaves? Then have we wasted all of that money within the training program?
Yes. So that's a brilliant question, and one that's often asked. If you want to be a Weisenheimer, your response would be, you know what, that's a great point. Let's not train anybody. Let's just keep them just kind of, you know, average people. So because if we train them, they're going to go ahead and go.
Right.
Now, obviously, that's not the approach. But I understand the question. The premise is, what if we invest all of these resources and Pete decides he's not going to stay with us and go somewhere else? And the way that we talk about it is that could happen. But at least during the time that Pete is with us, his ability to contribute to the organization is impacted directly by the amount of training and developing he has. I tell you the way that American Express looked at it, which I thought was very provocative. They said, we want Pete to stay. We're going to invest in him for everything that he's worth. But if there's a day that he goes and he goes work somewhere else, he will be taking along with him and contributing to the community that he's in the benefits and the expertise that we spent helping him get. His community and the rest of the people that he interacts with will benefit, and that's not a bad thing. So it's an opportunity for your organization maybe to think a little bit outside its walls and say, if we do have people leave, then they will take with them the benefits and the skills and the expertise that we were able to give them and leverage those for the betterment of their community and the worlds that they live in. And that's not a bad thing. But at the end of the day, the real question is, the question you ask really gets to, so why are people leaving? And that's probably for another topic for another day, because that is an important question to ask. But if people do move on and they take our talents and skills and our way of thinking with them, that's actually a good thing for the communities in which they live and work.
Do you think it's important also to focus on building relationships? One of the examples that come to mind is the MLB. All of the players have, you know, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars of resources invested into that player, but that player could be traded to another team. So you look at it as, what is going to keep that player with the St. Louis Cardinals? Is it the fan community, the whole family community? Are those things that also companies should be thinking about?
I think that's a very intuitive way of viewing it. One of the sages of talent and leadership work, Peter Drucker, passed away a bit ago. Peter Drucker made the point that he said, you know, one of the things that may be creating some of the challenges we have today in America, in the U.S., in his mind, was that young people do not have the opportunity. He said, we did away with the draft. And whether you like or don't like the draft, he said, one of the things that young people learned by going into the military for a period of time was duty, honor, country, service. Mm-hmm. And losing that opportunity to have people get that experience, we can somewhat see some of that play out today. Ginny, I think it's the same point that you're making. It's the military puts an awful lot of time and treasure into its people, mm-hmm. knowing that there's a day where those people are going to detach from the military and come back into the public life. And the military is like, we like that. We like people who walk away from the military, you know, exit from the military and bring into, you know, their communities the discipline, the learning, the service that they got from the military. I think you could apply that to just about any place, sports, different organizations. I think that makes perfect sense.
So the big takeaway there would be building loyalty is also something that you need to have in your toolbox of basics.
So it'd be interesting so there's a lot of conversation today about loyalty and there's some things about loyalty we look and say, man, that's really good. There's also things about loyalty that we have to be very guarded about. But let's say when we talk about loyalty, we're talking about people's engagement with the organization. And we do see a direct correlation by the way organizations invest in their people and the way their people return that investment back to their organization. in terms of their engagement. For me, now this comes from, you know, 10 years at the Center for Creative Leadership and another 10 years actually running an HR function. Most of the time when people leave a company, there's three perennial reasons why people leave. Sherm just came out with this just a minute ago. They came out and said, hey, you know, we see a lot of people leaving organizations because the culture has gotten toxic or their boss has become a real challenge for them. And so that we see that's one reason people leave. But another reason that people leave is that they don't feel as though their opportunity to grow and develop is being recognized. And when they don't get that, they walk away. They step away.
So that really brings, I think, a good segue into our next part of this particular episode, and that is conversations around talent. How should companies be approaching those conversations? Should they even be having those conversations, and what are the benefits?
Yeah, so absolutely. Talent should be a part of the conversation. It should begin in the boardroom and then find its way throughout the organization all around. And I think it starts with, first thing is, what are the key metrics that we're looking at and being mindful of that tell us the health of our talent? There's a lot of key metrics that we look at from an economic standpoint. How's the business doing, you know, just around its financials? There's a number of metrics that we look on in terms of customer relationships and sales and product. What are the key talent indicators that tell us how our people are doing? And they're pretty simple. Our engagement metrics help us understand people's commitment to the organization. Our attraction and our attrition metrics help us understand how people are feeling about the company. And then, of course, our performance metrics. Those are three very simple things. Engagement, how are we getting people, and why are people leaving, and performance. Those are all three things that first question, health of our talent, and what are the things we're looking at. The second thing we look at is clarity year over year on our talent development goals and awareness of the impact. So greater impact, greater insight on where are we making investments in talent, and are those investments returning a value for us, returning something back to us. Mm-hmm. That is not a difficult thing to do, but if we're going to put tens of thousands of dollars into a leadership development program, are we seeing something come back, an impact from those?
Right.
We did this at the OG&E. We did some longitudinal studies to say, is our work really having impact on the effectiveness of how our leaders engage? And they came back and showed us indeed they were. And the other thing that we need to be looking at just, you know, year over year is the quality of our bench strength for people who can step into critical roles. Where are the critical positions? Where are the critical people? And then the last thing we just think about, track with our vision, our work to want to grow and develop people. And is our culture, is the culture of our company lending itself to that vision?
Who are some people, I mean, when you're looking at a company and the different departments, who are the folks who really should be managing the talent? Is that a role for someone in HR or a different area?
You know, that's so you'll often hear a chief financial officer get up and say, hey, look, I have the title of chief financial officer, but everybody here is responsible for budgets and everybody here is responsible for making solid, you know, financial sound decisions. So everybody owns the finances. I just happen to be the person who tries to collect all that and make some meaning of it. I would steal that message and say the exact same thing. While the person who's running HR might be the caretaker for the organization has and our health of our talent metrics, in truth, every leader in the organization has accountability for talent. The question we ask is, who's the most important leader in the business? It's not the CEO. The most important leader in the business is the person that you work for. That's the most important leader. And so all the leaders in the organization have accountability for their talent. But specifically, Jenny, the conversation around talent has to start in the boardroom. You know, who are critical people? Where are our critical positions? Who are the critical people? How are we going to make sure that we have a pipeline of qualified people who can step into those roles as we need it? Every solid business has a continuity plan that says, you know, if something were to happen, God forbid, in this location, here's how we would continue operations. They need to have the same thinking around their talent. If so-and-so were not here tomorrow, how would we continue to go? So who are the roles? Where are the critical positions? That needs to start there. And then from the boardroom, move on down through the organization. And then we're asking basically the same questions, just a finer level of detail. In research and development, where are the critical roles and the critical people? How are we doing making sure we grow and develop them? All the way down so that even the person who's a supervisor of a group of folks who are selling product, how am I growing and developing these folks? How do they look? What's the health of my team? And what am I doing to invest in them so they continue to produce the most for a company?
Now, what about, you know, in agribusiness, we have companies that are, you know, large, mid-grade, but we also have a lot of smaller companies. Is it wise financially to have one person as a talent manager, or how can you work that role in when you've got limited resources?
That's a very good question also. Ginny, what we find and what I've seen mostly is some folks wear multiple hats just because their scale is such that they can't afford to have one person do this. So in a lot of the smaller farms, the farm owner takes that accountability. We've been doing a lot of work with dairy farms. It's just amazing to me the way these farm owners, these operations owners take the responsibility for leading and growing their people. I mean, it truthfully, Jenny, it puts to shame some of the larger organizations do. I wish I could take the dairy owner operator of a mid-sized operations group and just pick him up and put him in charge for just a little bit. It would really shake things up. Mm-hmm. But they have a passion. They understand the importance of their people and the difference that they make. They see daily, you know, what an engaged worker can do and what a disengaged worker can do. And they're committed to create a workplace where people feel like they're connected to something.
Absolutely. I can think of three actual examples right off the top of my head. One would be Ashley Kennedy, who is a Michigan dairy farmer. And I know that they've gone to great lengths to make sure that they have the proper resources for their employees so that they know what they're doing, but they've also got backup plans and crisis plans and things like that in case something, you know, were to arise. But they also, I think, put some steps in there to make sure that they know their employees are valued as well. And then another is Jay Hill. And he, I think they farm, I don't know, gosh, probably like 18 different commodities at this point. They are in New Mexico and Texas, and they really take good care of their employees and also have a very good structure going. And then Aaron Bremerman, who is in the pig industry, and they have a pig farm in Iowa, and they do an excellent job there as well. But that would be an interesting concept if we were to throw some of them into larger businesses.
Yes. I think I could add to your list the folks at Purdue University are working with Fibro in their animal science group, and mm-hmm. Fibro is now at dairy farms. Actually, Purdue has actually designed and developed an engagement survey just for these dairy farms that Fibro is helping for Fibro, that Fibro will help facilitate with the dairy farms so the owners, operators can have a better sense of what are the moments of truth? What are the key moments that really mean a lot to their workforce? And how can they be consistent and focused on those over the period of a year, you know, the years? And so I think these smaller groups are doing it. I could tell you some larger groups are equally focused, I think, admirably in talent. Syngenta is just doing a remarkable job with their talent work. Nutrient, a remarkable job in their talent work, and again, as you know, Fibro. So there's a lot of examples in the agribusiness world, from larger institutions down to, you know, the smaller farms, where they're very mindful of the importance of talent as a resource and how to invest and manage that investment over time.
Very good. Are there any other examples that you have who have maybe spearheaded the idea of a talent manager role in their organization?
Yeah, you know, I would say so. Again, now this is just from my field of view and my experience. I would say that American Express is perhaps one of the best organizations I personally know and worked with, where developing talent wasn't just something that you do when you have a little extra money and times are good. Mm-hmm. They commit a lot of energy and time and treasure to developing their talent. I think one of the best things that I experienced personally with Amex is they're not afraid for people to fail. If people mm-hmm. mess, I could tell you some stories of some colossal goof ups I did at American Express, and they were not career limiting. They were things that I was expected to learn from and apply going forward, but they were really brilliant at that. I would say they're pretty good. Of course, you know, the energy industry, like most, I think they do the investment when times are good, but when times get hard, they're quick to stop it. I did some work in South Africa, and that was very prevalent there. When things were good and you had a little extra cash, you put it with your people. But when things got lean, you just kind of go away from it. That's you can't sustain an engaged workforce if your focus on talent is only when times are good. Mm-hmm. You have to focus on talent, and especially when times are bad.
Right. And I think the same applies. I mean, when you look at different companies who are tightening their belts, a lot of times it's the communications and marketing and probably the talent managers who are being reduced, I guess, would be one way of saying it. But in retrospect, I think that those are some of the most important, I guess, back to the annuity versus commodity. Those are the annuity philosophies and approaches that are going to keep the company going long term.
Ginny, I couldn't have said it any better. And I say this with all deference to my friends who work in the energy field. The energy sector in America right now is just beat up. Mm-hmm. You look at their stock performance and their earnings per share and all that, and it's terrible. And the reductions in their workforces are just hard. And I understand all of the finances around why you have to do that. But it's just what you said. One of the first things they stopped was investing in people. And it will be difficult to re-energize that when things turn around. And people have long memories. Some of the energy firms I know it'll probably be a generation or two before they ever get a workforce back that trusts the leadership again, because it's just mm-hmm. and now's not the time. Now's not the time to be minimizing or actually minimizing the investment that you make in your people.
Well said. Very well said. If people would like to learn more information about the work that you have done in the past and then what you're doing at Purdue, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, that's pretty straightforward. I'm now a visiting professor with Purdue. I work in the Center for Agribusiness, Food and Agribusiness. So if you just went online and looked at Purdue Center for Agribusiness, you can find me there and connect with the folks here at Purdue, and they'll be able to share with you some of the things that we have going on here, and how the folks at Purdue might be able to help. Not just in the agribusiness side, which is key, and gosh, Purdue's just got a remarkable track record in how they do that. But what now the Food and Agribusiness Group is doing on the leadership and organizational development side as well.
Well, we certainly appreciate the partnership. What are some different topics that will be coming up in later episodes?
Purdue has put together a vision of what they think talent management ought to look like. Focus, they have this little framework that I think the Seed World folks have out there. But basically, it starts with culture, and then it goes to how we align strategy and requirement, talent requirements, which is where we are today. Then the next things we can talk about will be around talent acquisition. How do we get the people we need? How do we manage their performance? how do we invest in learning and development, how we make sure we have an engaged workforce that we're hanging on. And then the last little piece is, so how do we plan for the next generation? We were working actually today with the Society of Seed and Trade. They made the comment that is not unusual. The number of people who are eligible to retire in that industry right now is very, very high. Mm-hmm. So what do we do when these folks actually do decide that they're going to retire? How do we make sure we have the right people to come in behind them?
Very good. Very good. Well, for Seed World, this is Jenny Schweigert, and I will be signing off until the next time we talk. Thank you very much, Pete. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Jenny. Talk to you soon.